This is Elodie Reed, digital producer for Vermont Public Radio. This podcast has been edited for brevity and clarity.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Vermont author Amy Peake has received one of the highest compliments awarded to American science fiction and fantasy writers. She's been named a finalist for the 56th Annual Nebula Awards. She's been nominated for her short story, Advanced Word Problems in Portal Math, which surprised her a little bit, she says, because Portal Math is flash fiction under 1,000 words. Amy Peake joins us now to talk about writing fantasy and what it's like to be recognized in this way. Amy, what a pleasure to have you on the show. Welcome.
Hi. Yeah, thanks for having me on the show. I'm really excited to talk about my story.
Well, good. Let's start there, because I'd love it if you could describe for listeners who have not yet read this story, Penny, the main character who moves through her life in this very short story, but in a sort of an intimate way, in both predictable and totally unpredictable ways.
Yeah, she starts off as a 13-year-old girl, and she encounters various obstacles to the things that she wants to achieve in her life along the way, and she keeps looking for a portal. So for people who don't know what that is, like in fantasy literature, there's a type of book called a portal fantasy, which is where you find a door or an entrance to another world. So the classic example is Narnia, The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, where the four children find the entrance to Narnia in the wardrobe. And so she's on the hunt for a way to escape the challenges and the issues in her world, to find a better world, to find a world where she can do the things that she wants to do. And so it's told through actual word problems. So in each section, you get what's going on in Penny's life, and then you as the reader are asked to kind of try to figure out why can't she find the portal at this point in her life.
I loved that part. I mean, as just a reader who appreciates the craft of writing, I was so struck by how you made these word problems in the story, within the story. And so, you know, you have a paragraph and then, like any other word problem, if you remember back to your school days, it'll say, solve for this. And I'm just curious how you came to even think of that structure. Not only is it about this kind of young woman who may feel familiar to many of us, and then she's searching for portals, and then it's a word problem. How did you come up with the structure?
Yeah, I basically combined something I really love, which are portal fantasies, with something I really hate, which is word problems. I am not a math person at all, and I think when I was a kid, I think one of the things that kind of frustrated me about word problems is that it always sounds like the beginning of a story, you know, like, you know, Madison and Jake are on two different trains going different speeds, you know, who gets there first? And I'm like, okay, but then what happens when they get there? Is Jake angry that Madison got there first? Like, what's, you know, why are they on different trains? So I've kind of wanted to learn more about, like, the stories and word problems. And so anyway, I think I just took that and that those two different ideas and kind of smushed them together in the story. And, you know, the thing about word problems, too, is that these word problems, I think, is that they're kind of unsolvable. And that's sort of the point. It's like kind of the frustration of maybe some of us had with math, where you get a word problem and you can't quite figure it out, or it just seems like so hard to solve. But I think there's an analogy to real life. Like, you have these problems and sometimes they just seem completely unsolvable. How do you fix this? And maybe there isn't really a solution.
Yeah, I was looking at them and thinking, oh, these were the math problems that I didn't much like. Even in the parts of math that I really loved, the word problems, at least on the face of them, when you first look at them, it's like, oh my gosh, really? There's no way to solve this. But then, you know, in this case, there kind of is no way to solve this. Amy, when you were writing it, you know, Penny starts at age 13 and she wants to find a portal to change her life trajectory. And there are lots of us who wanted that at 13, and maybe at 30 still do or did, but didn't actively think that portals existed, or didn't search and seek in that same way. Why does Penny, throughout her young adult life, continue to look for a portal to change her life trajectory instead of finding a way to break free while living in this dimension?
Well, you know, it's a really good question. The story is really about the challenges that women face throughout their lives, and sometimes ways that are hard to see at that time in your life. You know, the way maybe other people are given advancement in the job, in the workplace, and you aren't. And And I think it's hard sometimes to articulate that when you're going through it. And so, you know, she's looking for a way out. And in real life, there's kind of no way out. And I think that's something that maybe, you know, as I've gotten older, I realize the forces that sometimes are you have to deal with as a woman or any group that traditionally hasn't been given the same types of advancement and encouragement that other privileged groups have been given can seem really impossible, can seem really hard to find, and you're working as hard as you can, but no matter what you do, sometimes it seems like you just can't find that door. You can't find that way to that advancement. And so it's kind of what I wanted to talk about was, you know, the portal as a metaphor for seeing that door and seeing that way through to whatever it is you want, like a promotion or being named the CEO or, I don't know, whatever it is. But then someone else gets there before you because they're seen as the hero. They're seen as someone who fits that description of the person who should walk through that door, and you aren't. Which often, sometimes it's because you were a mom or because you're a woman or maybe a person of color. I can't speak for people of color because I'm white, but, you know, I think that is a frustration that a lot of people find in their lives.
Amy, you wrote this story, I think, in 2019, right? So it wasn't inspired by super recent events, but it seems like it might have more poignancy today, at least for readers.
You know, it's funny. I think so. This was published in January 2020. So, like, what, 2 months before the pandemic shut everything down. And I think it has taken on more resonance because of what's happened in the past year for a lot of women. And it's happened, of course, to some men as well. But, you know, we see it in the statistics. And I should say my day job is I'm a business reporter. So I actually report on this. And I just had an article 2 weeks ago for International, I think it was 2 weeks ago for International Women's Day, about what's happened with women in the workplace in the past year. And this is for CBS News. And, you know, the women's participation in the workforce is at a 33-year low. Women have, I think 3 million women have left the workforce. It's just been an incredible impact on women in work. And what's happened intimately with women's lives is that they are just taking on so much more. As children were remote schooled, women ended up taking on more of that responsibility of making sure their kids were in school and doing the work and could get on the computers. I interviewed several women for that article, and you know, it's been a struggle. You know, one woman told me, you know, she's still running her business, but she's working from 7 at night to midnight to keep her business going because during the day she has a 3-year-old, she has to, you know, keep on top of her child. Another woman had to quit her work entirely, even though she has more education than her husband. He could make more money than her, and so she had to scale back completely. They had a 10-year-old daughter. So, you know, I think that this has kind of taken on more resonance in the past year. But even actually, I think it was interesting, even when the story came out in January, I heard from a woman who I think was in her 70s, and she said, "Your story just summed up the way I felt my whole life." And that meant so much to me. I felt like, okay, wow, I'm really like saying something that's meaningful to somebody and expressing the feelings I think a lot of women have had, even before the pandemic and everything that's happened in the past year to a lot of women.
Yeah, you know, it must feel wonderful to have a reader say, "I feel seen in your work." On the other hand, you know, I read this story and also felt some really familiar feelings, but then found it so demoralizing and depressing to think of, you know, this vibrant, strong young woman thinking, "I got to find a way out of this world because there's no way for me to make it here. There's no way to succeed. I can't see a path forward." And, you know, I wonder for you as the writer, you know, it feels great to have resonance, but it must also feel sort of sad that this is such a resonant story.
I mean, I have to say it is. I have 2 daughters who are teenagers now, and I look at some of the stuff that they encounter now, and I'm like, oh my gosh, we're still dealing with this. You know, some of the stuff, the things they have to encounter, you know, it's kind of, it is sad and it is shocking. And I just hope that, things will change. I am hopeful, and I am hopeful that with the pandemic, I think it has called a lot of these issues to the forefront. I think people are talking about it from, you know, families, women, workplaces, and lawmakers. I think suddenly we're seeing people realize, okay, this isn't just an issue for women. This is a national issue. This impacts everybody. And, you know, if we can't fix these problems, nothing's going to change. So I do feel hopeful, actually, even though I think the story came from kind of a place of maybe a little bit of anger and also some disappointment in that we haven't had more progress than we have. And we have had progress, but I'm hopeful. I think things will get better.
As you mentioned, you're a business journalist and you write fantasy fiction. How do you see fiction and maybe especially fantasy as getting us to the same kind of story that we're reading in nonfiction articles, you know, through your business journalism, for example, but in a different way, maybe coming at it from a different angle or finding a different sort of resonance within our chests when we're reading fantasy?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, the thing I love about science fiction and fantasy is that it's the literature of metaphor. So, you know, the portal in my story is a metaphor for, like I said, like the door that, you know, often people encounter when they're trying to advance and they can't, or other things are holding them back. And so I think it allows you to kind of take an issue and separate it from the real world and kind of examine it in a different way that can kind of highlight and kind of fascinate people in a way that might be even a little harder to do sometimes in journalism. I really think some of the fantasy and science fiction work that's coming out now is just really incredible in the way that it's looking at social issues, all kinds of different issues, and getting people to really think about it and debate it. And it's not without criticism and critique. I mean, a lot of people don't want that. I mean, they don't want that in the science fiction or fantasy. They think, you know, science fiction should be robots in space and fantasy should be elves and hobbits. They shouldn't be, you know, have a social message. But I completely disagree because I think that, you know, throughout history, there's always been a social message. It's always been, like I said, the language of and literature of metaphor.
So were you surprised that this story in particular was the one that got you nominated as a finalist for the Nebula Awards?
I was a little surprised. And the reason why is because it's a form of fiction called flash fiction, which is very short fiction. It's usually under 1,000 words. And it generally doesn't get on ballots. I think there have been only 2 or 3 flash fiction stories before this that have been nominated for a Nebula Award. So, you know, even though it had a lot of recommendations from folks, I thought, oh, there's no way. There's no way it'll end up on the ballot because people generally, I think, favor longer stories because they're seen as meatier or weightier. But I do think that there was something in the story that just struck a chord with people and helped get attention for it.
Yeah. So, you know, this is a story about what it's like to have ingrained gender roles that are hard to escape in some ways from your earliest days up through your life if you're a woman living in this world at this time. And I'm curious, you know, when you look at your own career and look at this award nomination and becoming a finalist, do you ever feel that imposter syndrome? Did you have to get through that to get to the point where you said, okay, it's flash fiction. That's still a valid reason for it to be on the, you know, in the mix here to win an award. And I deserve to be in the mix to win this award. I mean, did you have to deal with any of that or are you maybe living in a different dimension already?
Oh, no. Imposter syndrome is an old friend. I think it's something that a lot of people deal with, but I did. I mean, when I first got the call, so about 3 weeks ago, I thought it was a mistake. I actually couldn't really believe it. It's definitely feeling more real now, which is good. But I think it's very common. I think it's also common, especially for women, to feel that imposter syndrome. And you know, in terms of my own life, I mean, I actually didn't really start writing fiction seriously until I turned 40. I mean, I had my kids in my 30s, and I was so busy with work and kids, and so I kind of, you know, in a way, this story kind of resonates with me too. And I think a lot of women also have that experience of, all right, I'm just going to wait a little bit. Like, I don't have the time in my life right now to do these things that I really want to do. But, you know, I think the message is at some point you will. And that, you know, it just, I think, takes a while to kind of feel maybe like you belong there. But it's been huge, and you know, I want to say that the other stories on the Nebula ballot are incredible. I mean, if people really are interested in fantasy and science fiction, I would recommend that they look at the other stories. They're all so good and all have something really amazing to say about what's going on in society, in the world, and what it's like to be a human right now. So I really, really recommend other people look at those stories.
Well, yes, I do too. And if you want to read Amy Peake's story, Advanced Word Problems in Portal Math, we have a link at vpr.org. Amy is a finalist for the Nebula Awards for that story. Thank you so much for talking with us, and good luck.
Thanks, Jane. I appreciate it. It's great talking with you.